Welcome back. Are you under 30 and registered to vote? Why or why not? On election day, young people are more likely than any other age group to sit on the sidelines, but many people are trying to change that, and there are signs that the young could make a much stronger showing at the polls this November. How is the polarized politics of the day affecting the youth vote, and what's being done to encourage more young people to register? What local races will be most influenced by this demographic? Joining me in studio to discuss this is Carolyn DeWitt. She's president and executive director of Rock the Vote, the D.C.-based nonpartisan nonprofit that registers young people to vote. Carolyn, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Justina Blanco. She's the president of the Prince George's Regional Association of Student Government. She's also a senior at Parkdale High School in Riverdale, Maryland. Justina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Spencer Dixon is a master's degree candidate in public policy at George Washington University and a founder of GW Votes. Spencer, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kojo.
Joining us by phone is Rachel Bitterkofer, a political science professor at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia, where she teaches classes on political behavior and elections. Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You look at polling data. You study voting patterns. Young people get a bad rep when it comes to voting. Do they deserve it?
They do. They do deserve it. You know, historically speaking, young people dramatically underperform their potential share of the electorate. And, you know, it's something that has been an enduring problem in American politics ever since the age to vote was lowered down. We've had this issue of trying to get young people to motivate and show up on election day.
What does that exactly mean in terms of the ages and the category of people referred to as the youth vote or young voters?
Yeah, so I mean, here I'm going to work with a definition of young people being age 18 to about 30. And when we think about them, usually they make up about 14% of the overall electorate. And, you know, that is, you know, when you think about it conversely, that means the vast majority of the electorate are voters that are older than 40. And even then, the best turnout group is those who are over the age of 55. So we're talking about an electorate that definitely overrepresents later generations and underrepresents, you know, the younger generations.
Since I haven't been a youth voter for at least a couple of years, can you tell me what issues do they care about and how do they tend to vote?
I thought you were still in that age bracket there.
I did too, until I was reminded that I wasn't.
So what motivates young people to vote is something that shocks the system. So I was looking through some data from the Harvard Institute of Politics, which fortunately collects vote intention data over the A Good Time series. And one of the things I noticed was there was a giant spike of interest in 2008 when Obama was first running for the presidency. And ultimately, the reported intention to vote was overreported by about 14 points for that age group. But it made me wonder, okay, we're seeing a similar but less pronounced spike here in 2018. Is that a product of, you know, the Parkland effect? Is it a product of Donald Trump's presidency being kind of an outlier in terms of how the presidency has been in, you know, the previous 44 iterations? So, but we definitely see some evidence that this is going to be a higher interest election for that age bracket.
One of the things you do as a political scientist, Rachel, is to make electoral predictions. If indeed we are seeing a likely higher turnout of young people in the upcoming elections, especially in this region, what do you predict about the youth vote in November's election in our region, and what races might it affect in particular?
Yeah, so it would not take very much for us to see a difference if young people were to show up in higher numbers than normal, specifically in places like Virginia's 10th congressional district, which tucks into you know, northern Virginia pretty heavily. The urban areas tend to have a lot of young people. There's a lot of colleges. That would be an area in particular that I would expect to see some effect on that vote if young people tick their turnout out. And what we do know with young people is that they identify, you know, vast majority of them identify with Democrats right now. They particularly come down with the Democratic Party in terms of issues, particularly social issues. So you would assume that an uptick would benefit Democrats.
Is there any connection between the youth vote, as far as you know, and women candidates?
Well, there certainly could be. We're talking about young people looking at, you know, in this cycle in particular, across the country, we have candidates that are breaking barriers. Last year in Virginia, Danica Rome's candidacy in the House of Delegates here was, you know, not only the first transgendered person elected to office in Virginia, but I believe it was nationally, and that attracted a lot of energy and excitement from young people. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if young people are rallying around particular candidates, and I think we're going to see that best exemplified around Beto O'Rourke in Texas.
Tell us a little bit more why.
Because Beto O'Rourke has that Obama factor, is something I noticed right away about 10 months ago when I first looked into that race, because I have my own midterm prediction model. And when I looked at Beto O'Rourke immediately, I said, oh, that's going to be the kind of person that is going to get young people really motivated. And if your listeners are unfamiliar with Beto O'Rourke, you can YouTube him and you'll probably see what I'm talking about pretty quickly.
And he's running against Republican incumbent Ted Cruz?
Yes, he is. An uphill battle, but the fact that it's competitive at all really tells you about the electoral conditions facing Republicans headed into these midterms.
Are you a young person who registered to vote recently? How hard or how easy was it? Spencer Dixon, you work for the Young Invincibles. Who are they and what are they doing to turn out the youth vote?
That's right, Kojo. Young Invincibles is mostly a research and advocacy organization working to uplift the economic interest of young adults. But we also have a small but mighty civic engagement team that I'm a part of. And we help run a national coalition called the Students Learn, Students Vote Coalition that works to improve student voter registration, voter education, and voter turnout across the campuses in the country.
Rachel, many of the groups that are trying hard to get young people registered either lean left or are partnered with left-leaning groups. Why is this? And is there voter outreach on the other side of the political spectrum?
So it's definitely a product of the, you know, the liberal leaning of that age bracket. So, I mean, if you think about the majority of young people leaning Democratic, having them mobilized to show up and vote is not beneficial to Republican candidates, right? And I think that you see that reflected in efforts to curtail access to early voting or absentee voting or, you know, polling locations in college, you know, college campuses across the country. But, you know, when you look at that, it's not to say, though, that there isn't some efforts made with young people. I know that the young Republicans or college Republicans have a very vibrant, you know, operation, at least here in Virginia and in the state that I was doing my PhD in Georgia. So there's that segment of young people, and I think it does depend, too, regionally where you are in the country.
Carolyn DeWitt, your organization, D.C.-based Rock the Vote, made a splash nearly a generation ago with a video in which Madonna, parodying her Vogue song, encouraged young people to vote. Many people who thought the group was no longer active might be surprised to know you're still very much active. What has Rock the Vote done since, and how has the group changed its approach?
Yeah, so you're right, back in the 1990s when we were first founded, we came out of the music industry, and so we worked a lot with celebrities to make a big splash. No one else was actually speaking or representing young people at the time. So a big part of what we actually do now is we're behind the scenes. So we actually work a lot on civic technology. We work on voting rights policies to make the system more streamlined and work for young people. We also, through our technology, actually work with messengers, whether they are influencers, whether they're employers, whether they're schools, or whether it's peer-to-peer, in terms of helping young people get registered and get connected with the resources and information that they need. So for instance, in 2016, we had 900 partners use our tool to register 1.7 million. When anyone comes through our registration tool, they actually are signed up for election reminders, which feed through either SMS or through email the individual's custom basically custom information based on their address. So things like important dates and deadlines, and then links them up to resources that we have, like sample ballot lookups, everything that they need as new voters to participate in the process.
And you're doing all of that in also not just nationally, but in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
Yes, that's correct.
How powerful could young voters be as a group if they actually flex their political muscle?
Young voters make up now the largest voting bloc in our electorate, and by 2020, they will actually comprise nearly 40% of the electorate. So we are looking at if they turn out even in remotely, percentage-wise, they could actually determine not just a few elections, but actually the entire direction of our country and our communities.
On to the phones. Here is Mo in Arlington, Virginia. Mo, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I'd like to comment that I think it's beneficial that many young people don't vote, because it's been shown that most of them, or many of them, have no knowledge or interest in the political situation or the history of our country. Most of them don't, I can't quote any specific test, but there are many surveys showing that many of them, for example, have no idea who the enemies of our country were during World War II, for example. And anything like this, young people are just not interested in history or politics. They, as they get a little bit older, realize that they're part of history, then they become a little bit more interested in it.
Okay, I have three responses for you. One is from Caleb, who writes, I'm a young person, 27, who has never missed an election and is currently running for office here in D.C., specifically for ANC. We need to have a voice in our government, and we have to vote to do so. And I'm going to ask Justina Blanco and Spencer Dixon both to also respond. Justina.
Well, I am only 17 years old. All of my friends are only 17 years old, and we are very interested in what's going on in this country. And actually, I think that young people are actually a lot more educated in what's going on in historical terms, because we're in school. I am learning about World War I and World War II right now. I can name battles. I mean, and I think that there are many things you'll see online. When you ask adults these things, they just don't know. And I think that if you want to know, if you want history, you're going straight to those classrooms. And in Prince George's County especially, we have many students who are very interested in the electoral process. We have many students right out of high school that are running for school board positions. And we have many students that are helping them campaign while they're still in high school. Students are interested, but I think they aren't given as much chances as they should to actually get involved in bigger campaigns or bigger elections.
Spencer Dixon.
Yes, I'd like to just piggyback on what Justina said. And with all due respect to the caller, what he said is not exactly true. The conventional wisdom is that young people are apathetic, that they don't care about the issues in their lives. That is simply not true. There are two main barriers that are put up preventing young people from voting. One of them is a perceived barrier around overcomplicating the voting process, whether it's voter registration or voter turnout. There is an information gap, but we can be out there educating voters to combat that. Second, I would be remiss if I did not speak to the legal barriers that exist, whether that's the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, unnecessary voter ID laws across the country. These are things that are making it harder to vote for students, and especially students of color. The last point I'd make is that these barriers are not insurmountable. What we're doing at the Students Learn, Students Vote Coalition is working with administrators to provide students the information they need to cast their vote, and then fighting a student-friendly voter advocacy front out in the states.
Rachel Bitterkoff, have any comments on this conversation we're currently having?
Yeah, I could speak up just more broadly on what the caller is trying to argue in terms of political knowledge, which is, of course, like a basic understanding of government and knowing something about the parties and the issues. And young people are no better or no worse than any other group of voters in terms of being able to articulate those concepts. The American public has generally got very high levels of civic illiteracy, and that it's among voters and non-voters, although with people who pay attention, they tend to have a little bit better levels of civic literacy, and that goes with the fact that they're interested. So as the young panelist pointed out, young people that are interested are absolutely just as capable, if not more, of assessing issues and candidates than any other voter.
Going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more from Carolyn Spencer and Justina about exactly what they're doing and what their observations are about what they're experiencing. Rachel Bitterkoffer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rachel Bitterkoffer is a political science professor at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-433-8850. Are you the parent of a young person who is eligible or will soon be eligible to vote? Have you talked to them about voting? 800-433-8850. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back to this conversation about youth voting with Carolyn DeWitt, President and Executive Director of Rock the Vote, the D.C.-based nonpartisan nonprofit that registers young people to vote. Justina Blanco is the President of the Prince George's Regional Association of Student Government and a senior at Parkdale High School in Riverdale, Maryland. Spencer Dixon is a master's degree candidate in public policy at George Washington University and a founder of GW Votes. Spencer, tell us about GW Votes. Why did you co-found it?
Well, it's a perfect example of the Students Learn, Students Vote model being implemented on a campus. I came to found GW Votes both as an employee of Young Invincibles and as a grad student. And what we focus on is bringing student leaders and administrators together, looking at the voting data that's available for each individual campus, coming up with a strategic plan that meets the specific needs of our campus, in this case, GW. And then engaging different student groups, different departments across the university, and we're well underway in implementing that program now, and we're excited to see how things turn out.
Even at what may be one of the most politically active colleges in the country, located right in the smack in the center of Washington, you still encounter a lot of students who have not registered to vote at GW. What's holding them back?
Well, as I mentioned earlier,
some of the factors you mentioned earlier,
right, both the perceived and legal barriers. But we've got things planned. We participated in National Voter Registration Day several weeks ago. We were one of 500 campuses to do so. That was a 12 times increase in the number of campuses that participated in 2014. We're seeing big growth there, and both on the registration figure that you mentioned, but also on the turnout figure. We have programming to meet the needs of our students. We're having a party at the mailbox in a few weeks so that GW students, many of whom are from around the country, can cast their ballot through the mail.
In your voter registration work, do you encourage students to register locally or in their home states?
We don't really we don't encourage one way or the other. We just make it clear what options students have. There's a Supreme Court decision, I don't recall the name off the top of my head, that allows students to have the right to vote either on their campus or at home. So we leave that decision up to students. I think they're well in their right to make their own decision.
But Carolyn, D.C. has no voting representation in Congress, and I guess wouldn't the votes of college students in D.C. have a greater impact if they vote in their home states? I hate to say that, but I have to.
Well, I think impact can mean different things. So it is, I would say, up to the student. The interesting thing about while students can actually register at either place, their homes or their schools, the census actually counts them at their schools. And I think that's a point that is important, because a lot of times students think, I'm only here for, two or four years. I don't really, I don't have a voice here. I shouldn't participate in this
community.
But
the census is counting you here.
But the census actually counts you where you go to school. However, you do have the right to vote in either location.
Justina, you're a high school senior. You haven't turned 18 yet, but you're trying to get eligible young people in Prince George's County registered. What tactics are you using and which have you found to be the most effective?
Well, last weekend we had our Young Voter Fest. That's the first time we've ever done that. But it was an event where we partnered with Mary Purge at the University of Maryland to try to get some students registered. It had speakers and music and everything like that. That wasn't as effective. I think that making the resources that are out there known, I think, is the most effective, especially through social media. Rock the Vote has made things very easy, especially with where you can text a number and immediately be able to register. And now that we can register at 16, it's really about getting that information out there while students are still in school, while we still have such easy access to so many young voters.
You say that the mass shooting at Florida's Parkland High School earlier this year is motivating young people. How are they connecting Parkland to their decision to vote?
I think Parkland really connects them to what the government has to do with our safety. It makes the students realize their direct connection with government and makes them care about why they should get involved. A lot of the things that when we talk about government in school, they seem abstract. They're things that we take an AP test on. So I think Parkland really brought it home, really brought it to this is my safety in my school. There are students dying that are just like me, and the government should be doing something about this, and they're not. So I think that anger and that realization really brought a lot of students more interested in politics, more interested in getting civically involved.
If you're looking for some evidence that students are engaged in this issue, well, they're engaged in this conversation. Here are some students from Oxon Hill High School in Oxon Hill, Maryland. Who goes first? Go ahead, please.
Go ahead. Hi, my name is Jada Eton. So here at Oxon Hill High School, the NAACP has been working with the student body to get individuals register to vote, and we have been doing that just by offering the paper registration forms throughout lunches, so that way we can encourage students to sign up to pre-register to vote.
This year we had over 60 students register, but one of the things that I noticed personally was that a lot of students were already registered. One thing you see a lot with our students here and a lot of other young people is that we register when we get our provisional licenses. I believe the next step would be is to keep pushing us, because you may not know that you can register as easily as you can, but when it's easy, you do it. The next step is pushing us to actually vote. There's a 2-year gap in between when you can vote and when a lot of students register. That's where we need more emphasis.
I think the reason, one big reason why we don't get a lot of youth to vote nowadays, because there's a lack of knowledge and there needs to be more education. Teaching youth that their vote is important, because there are students out here that feel like, you know, since we have the Electoral College, my vote doesn't matter, but they need to be educated on how their one vote can make a difference in their community and in, you know, the United States as a whole, in their state. It needs to be more education and more advertisement on youth voting, how they can register, and exactly what goes with their vote, and how they can benefit and how they can help their community with their vote.
Students from Oxon Hill High School in Oxon Hill, Maryland, because we're running out of time, I don't have a lot more time to spend with you, but thank you very much. But since we have a high school student here in the studio, Justina, to what extent do you see candidates engaging with young people in order to win their votes, considering that apparently they tend not to vote? Does it make a difference to young people when candidates specifically engage them?
I think it could, but we don't see a lot of candidates actually do that. At my school, we have a few of the younger board members that do come by and try to engage students, speak to us, talk to us about what issues are important to us, and even ask us to get involved in their campaigns. And I think that kind of direct action really helps students to see the value in the civic process. But we don't see that in a lot of other races and in a lot of older candidates. And I think that if students could really see the mechanics behind it, really see the people that are involved in it, they would see the value in their voice.
I know that you see racial disparities in access to voting. What do you think should be done about that?
I think voting education needs to become more of a systematic thing. That's something that we should be learning in school. I don't know how I get through my entire government class without learning exactly how to register, exactly how to vote, exactly what I should expect at the polls to know what to report. I think that when you don't give students access to those things, then you do make it something that's going to split up on demographics. If your family has access to that information, then they'll give it to you. But if they don't, you don't get it. And so now in communities where they don't have access to as much information, they don't have access to the information they need to vote.
Spencer, are any of the groups you're working with looking to register voters of color in particular?
Yes, there are several coalition partners that work with individual communities. For example, APIA Vote. We've seen through the reports that are out there on student voting that Asian Americans and Latinx students tend to vote at lower rates than white and black students. So it's an intention of the coalition to engage those organizations that are already doing the great work engaging those particular communities.
Carolyn.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to jump on what Justina said and back you up is one of the misnomers is that young people are apathetic, but we see that is so not true, especially this year in the energy we have seen around Parkland, but even before that with Black Lives Matter. What it comes down to is young people they're new voters and they're unfamiliar with the process, and we don't educate them in our school system like we should. I mean, one of the things that we've seen over the last few decades is civic education go down by the wayside. We have 10 states that don't require any civic education. 31 states only require one semester, which is 3.5 months. And so what you're seeing is high school students, only 25% test proficient on national civics assessment tests. And if you're white and wealthy, you are 5 to 6 times more likely to pass as proficient than Black and Latino students from lower income backgrounds. So what that means is those with the most need to advocate for resources are the least prepared to do so. So that's something that Rock the Vote's working on.
Here's Molly in Fairfax, Virginia. Molly, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a 19-year-old, and I'm from Fairfax, Virginia, though. I go to school in the University of Virginia, which is in Charlottesville. And so voting and political issues since last summer have really been a large issue. And I do know a lot of students. So, like, I was watching even though I'm not from Texas, I watched one of the Beto O'Rourke and one of their debates because I have a friend who's from Texas, and I have friends who are involved in, like, different political organizations, and I do see student ambassadors around grounds talking about getting to sign up, and like they have their clipboards and they have the paper registration.
Thank you very much for your call. Carolyn, your organization is drawing a direct line between young voters and issues of particular importance to women. Tell us about your connection to the Women's March and other women-focused initiatives.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, we provide a lot of technology, or as Justina said, text to codes. So we power the back end of a lot of movements that are happening, and including the Women's March. So if you, we power the voter registration of that and the text to code as well. What those things allow us to do is to actually follow up with voters, so they're not just registering to vote, but then they're getting all the information that they need to actually cast a ballot. One of the things we see is over and over again, obviously, the number one issue for young people, and it's not exclusive to young people, is the economy, it's jobs. Number two is education, but then we start to see a division of things like women's reproductive health. I do think to your question about are we going to see young people voting more for women candidates, I think what you see is young people are just open to more possibilities than older generations have been in the past. And so whether they're women candidates, whether they're trans candidates, whether they're LGBTQ, whether they're candidates of color or of different religions, I think this generation is not only the largest in our history, but it's also the most diverse and the most progressive.
Here's Heidi in Vienna, Virginia. Heidi, we're almost out of time. Can you say what you have to say in 30 seconds or less?
Sure. I'm just wondering if it would be possible to have as a requirement for high school graduation that students have to register to vote.
What do you think, Spencer?
Yeah, I'd like to make a point that that's kind of the basis by which the Students Learn, Students Vote Coalition is built, not necessarily on high schools, but in colleges. It is in the Higher Education Act that colleges have to distribute voter registration materials to their students, and we see that as a bare minimum and a model that could be replicated in high schools.
Well, both you, Carolyn, and you, Justina, can answer that and this question. Lowering the voting age to 16 for local elections has been done in a few municipalities in this country, two of them in our region, Tacoma Park and Hyattsville. As you answer the question about high school registration, do you think the voting age should be lowered?
So first, the high school registration. So actually, Rock the Vote launched a program this year called Democracy Class, in which it's a free curriculum for teachers to teach the history and importance of voting. The really exciting thing about the curriculum is actually that the curriculum ends with registering and pre-registering students. So they're engaging in the democracy classes class or democracy process right after they learn about it. Actually, our city of Baltimore actually has signed on to it, so they're pushing in their city. Philadelphia and LA have as well. So this is a program we look to expand into other cities and grow year by year. As far as the age of 16, I certainly think that lowering the voting age, particularly in local elections, would be really impactful for to see more engagement.
Justina, you get the last word.
I think that lowering the voting age could be something that could really open the doors to more voter education. When you're registering 16-year-olds, you might want to educate those 16-year-olds, and I think that could push a lot more education within schools. And it also would allow students to get that information in schools, register in schools, and be able to vote while they're still in school, so they have access to all the information that they do need. I think within municipalities, it's really great because you do get direct access to the people that are impacting you on the everyday.
Justina Blanco, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Carolyn DeWitt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Spencer Dixon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
That's it for today. Make sure to check out WAMU.org. Reporter LEU explored how immigrants could affect Northern Virginia's tight congressional race in the 10th district, because tomorrow we'll be looking at how federal immigration enforcement is playing out in places like Alexandria, Virginia, plus a play chronicling the life of comedian and longtime D.C. resident Dick Gregory is on stage now. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.